You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
New research, Indigenous Rights Beyond the Liberal Frame, has shown that certain human rights principles in the country are ironically being used to restrain Māori governance and tino rangatiratanga. On Thursday last week, intern Zay Noor spoke to Andrew Iruiti, an associate law professor at the University of Auckland and the lead of the study, about this study.
So your recent research, Indigenous Rights Beyond Liberal Frame, discusses the way human rights are being used to hinder efforts to recognise Māori authority. So firstly, I wanted to ask about the motivation for this research. Has it been an ongoing point of research, or has it been motivated by recent events?
A bit of both, yeah. So I've always looked at this in the context of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, because I've been working on that kupapa for a long time and how to implement it, and looked at how it was made. The making of the declaration involved this tension between self-determination asserted by Indigenous peoples, including Māori, and a human rights model, I call it, that was asserted by the Crown, which sought to read down Māori aspirations for self-determination. But it's been amplified and escalated for me because of politicians and, you know, that party, of course, but also National saying that, and New Zealand First saying that, preference treatment for Māori in terms of health or other social outcomes is racially discriminatory. And I think that needs a strong response that's grounded in principle and legal practice. And that's motivated this research for me.
In your research, you discuss the ways the government uses language such as equality and non-discrimination to combat Māori authority and constitutional transformation. Can you explain this further?
Yeah, so in the declaration negotiations, Māori and other Indigenous advocates were seeking recognition of their right to self-determination in UNDRIMP, as it's often called. And the government was really concerned about those aspirations. It used human rights as a mechanism to limit those aspirations. And so they made arguments like, for example, that those claims were inconsistent with human rights, and if Indigenous peoples wanted rights in the declaration, they had to be kind of classic human rights, if you like right to equality and non-discrimination, but just making it clear that those rights were to be enjoyed by Indigenous peoples as well as non-Indigenous peoples, so kind of clarity there, but really averse to reference to self-government or self-determination in the declaration. I think their real concern is they thought that Māori might be seeking rights akin to the sorts of tribal sovereignty that's enjoyed and exercised by tribes in the United States. They also made references to the reservation model, they would call it. And these were officials from MFAT, and say that that wasn't appropriate in the New Zealand context. Well, you know, what Māori seemed to be seeking was just greater autonomy to provide for their own, or, you know, often called by Māori for Māori. And self-determination enabled them to, you know, gave expression to that concept in international law, but New Zealand was really opposed to it.
As you've just kind of mentioned about self-determination, an important part of Te Tiriti o Waitangi is tino rangatiratanga, or self-determination. Do you feel enough is being done to honour this part of the treaty within this government and former governments?
Yeah, that's the great conundrum. It's a great puzzle now is how to give effect to that form of authority, and how would it look, and how would it interact with Crown and the executive and their authority. And I think that's what we're really struggling with at the moment. So efforts at co-governance in the context of treaty settlements are a move in the right direction. And the Māori Health Authority, I think, was a move in the right direction. But this opposition to the delivery of social services by Māori bodies is a big step backwards, I think. And it's particularly, I think we need to be really cautious about this, because now that treaty settlements, we're almost kind of getting to the close of that, the focus is going to turn more on social service provision, the needs of urban Māori, for example. And often those services are not delivered by tribes, often delivered by groups like Waipareira, for example. And when they make their service provision, they're quite vulnerable to allegations of being discriminatory, because they seem to be providing services on the basis of race or ethnicity, right? It's not a tribal grouping, it's not a political grouping that's serving the ends of their members. And so they're vulnerable in that respect to these allegations of racial discrimination. So that's my concern, is that this issue is only going to escalate as we go forward. And I think actually that's what the ACT Party and others, they seem to be homing in on this concept too, and seeing it as a vulnerable spot where they can make these allegations. It's harder to make them in relation to tribes and treaty settlements, but when you start to move beyond that into this new post-treaty settlement era, then urban body authorities and other health authorities are vulnerable to these sorts of accusations. And that the task for me, I think, is to provide, you know, a robust defence and basis for the provision of these food services by these bodies, because they're so essential, right? There's the need, and these bodies are very good at meeting that need.
In your research, you have discussed two models of understanding Indigenous rights, the liberal model and the decolonisation model. What are these two models and what differentiates them?
Yeah, so the decolonisation model is based on the idea of Indigenous peoples, tribes having prior sovereignty and jurisdiction, pre-sovereignty, being the first sovereigns, essentially. And in the declaration negotiations, they drew on decolonisation as an example of a people who were oppressed by their imperial European masters, who were then freed through the process of decolonisation. And they often drew parallels with that. And that process of decolonisation was really based on the right to self-determination. So they claimed a right in international law to self-determination, not seeking independence in that full sense of decolonisation, but just greater authority and autonomy within the state. And against that, New Zealand advanced a human rights equality-based model, which sought to read down self-determination claims, either say that they were inappropriate because they're inconsistent with human rights, or argue that they weren't really human rights, so they fell outside of the law of human rights and were merely aspirational. They often characterise self-determination as being aspirational, and that remains the standard government approach today. So they're just trying to adulterate that right to self-determination in international law by reducing it really to a human right to participate in decision-making and consultation and so forth, not a stronger, more robust right to self-govern.
An example of a reimagined treaty relationship is the Matiki Mai report. What would this relationship look like?
Yeah, I think the Matiki Mai report, you know, the idea of a tino rangatiratanga sphere and the kawanatanga sphere that overlap zones of interaction there is the model, right, for thinking about big picture reforms going forward, major constitutional reform. And so it's been developed through Te Puapua and other initiatives. I think it's a good starting point. The only thing about Matiki Mai is that it's big on generalities and higher level ideas, and the task really is to fill in. You know, there are lots of puzzles there about, you know, who within Māori, Te Ao Māori, fits within the rangatiratanga spheres, for example. Is it tribes only, or is it other forms of Māori political expression? How would Māori interact with the Crown in that interactional overlapping sphere, and who is the Crown? And so there are lots of good questions, but really it's a great model for stimulating activity and thinking about how to give effect to it. So the task now is how to fill in all those, or answer all those puzzles that are posed by Matiki Mai.
And how do you think recent policies proposed by the government reflect the current situation of Māori sovereignty in Aotearoa?
I think we've seen a rolling back of Indigenous rights in New Zealand. The tribunal, its jurisdiction is under review. We see the review of treaty clauses and their deletion in the Oranga Tamariki Act. And I think that's a big step backwards, particularly because of the social needs I was talking about and the need to be innovative in meeting those needs. And I often talk about the Waitangi Tribunal's COVID report when inquired into that policy of the Crown. One of the interesting things I liked about that is it talks about how when the Crown decided to fund Māori bodies to promote vaccination and to get vaccinations in arms, quickly Māori responded at the grassroots level in innovative ways. You know, there are Māori health providers, there were urban Māori authorities, there were iwi-based bodies. They all worked together to great effect, right? So you found that in the space of 2 months that over 150,000 Māori were vaccinated, right? So that just shows you if Māori communities are trusted to provide services, clearly there's evidence, empirical evidence, that Māori get it done. No? So the thing is, will the Crown trust Māori to deliver these different types of services? Sure enough, they can do it. They can knock it out of the park if they've got the funding and support from the state. But that requires a lot of trust, and I don't see a lot of that at the moment.
Lastly, what changes would you like to see the government make going forward to improve the rights of Māori in Aotearoa?
Well, I think it would be good to have bona fide engagement with Māori leaders about what that new constitution might look, and Mātiki Mai provides a template, a model for guiding that discussion. You know, and their Gepuapua report about implementing the declaration also had a path towards constitutional change. That discussion needs to take place, and it has to be on fair terms. And at the moment, we don't really have the traction there or the momentum, but I think people are optimistic. I think we're moving in the right direction. You know, efforts to roll back Indigenous rights are really firmly imbricated into the legal firmament and the cultural firmament of Aotearoa, but still to have that greater protection through a written constitution, I think would be ideal, right? Ensuring that you won't be going through what we're going through at the moment, where there's a step backwards and efforts to roll back the reforms. I think greater protection for those Indigenous rights should be the ambition.
That was the University of Auckland's Andrew Eruiti on his research, Indigenous Rights Beyond the Liberal Frame, showing human rights are being used to hinder efforts to recognise Māori governance.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.